Okay, let's get started. Good morning.
Wow, that's the best I've ever had for a first time. I'm not even going to ask you to do it again.
Welcome to Orlando and TechEd 2012. It's fantastic to see such a great turnout after the keynote. We're certainly excited to be here. Myself personally, this is my 10th TechEd in the server division, and this one's particularly special for me, and I believe for the Windows Server and System Center teams, on a couple of dimensions. First, the transformation and just the sheer number of products that we're bringing to market to help you transition through the transitions, some of the transitions that Satya talked about this morning. We're very excited about the transformation in the data center that's occurring, and we believe that we've got a great lineup of products and solutions to help you, and we want to work with you through that transition because we think that getting to the other side is very beneficial to you and your organizations. And the second reason is that we released the release candidate of Windows Server 2012 less than 2 weeks ago. And so we're right on the doorstep from making what we believe is a truly transformational product available to you in the market. So we are very, very excited by this particular TechEd and to be here and engage with you. In my role here at Microsoft, I travel to a lot of events, customer and partner events, and this by far stands out among those because of the sheer concentration of talent and technical capabilities that you all possess, and the ability for us and the product teams to connect with you and so many of you at one time. And so while we're here to certainly tell and talk to you and educate you about the products and capabilities that we're bringing to market, we're equally or even more so excited to be able to connect with you and hear about how we can make your lives easier and what we can do for your organizations. And so this is a very special tech ed for us and a very special tech ed for me. So over the next 60 minutes, we're going to talk about some of the transformations that we're going through, the trends. Then we're going to really focus on the products. And so we've got a lot of demos for you today across Windows Server 2012 and System Center. We really want to be able to showcase some of the capabilities. But we're really only going to be able to scratch the surface. There's over 130 sessions across the server and management tracks. There's something like 30 hands-on labs and over 80 Windows Server 2012 sessions. And so we really want to encourage you to take full advantage of this event, to connect with your peers, to connect with those of the hundreds of us from the product groups that are here, because we really want you to leverage this event during the event and afterwards. There's plenty of resources too. So set the context for 3 years ago when we started developing and working on the plan for Windows Server 2012, the secular trends that were going to shape the market and shape what IT, and in particular in the data center, were going to look like. So the first was cloud computing. So we've been talking about cloud computing for a number of years. At first, there was a lot of confusion about what cloud computing even was. And now that's transitioned to, well, how do I take advantage of it? When do I use the public cloud? How can I leverage these capabilities in my own data center? And so cloud is an undeniable trend. The question becomes, how can you best take advantage of it to better your organizational needs? The second trend around data, the sheer amount of data that's being produced on a daily basis is just astounding. And so how can you take that data and transition that into insight while at the same time maintaining the security of that data as well as reducing the cost of storing all of that data? So that was a significant trend that we looked at and a challenge that we set upon with Windows Server 2012, particularly around data storage. And lastly, the mobility trend, or the consumerization of IT and the proliferation of devices that we all use on a daily basis. The sheer number of devices that the average user uses in your organization is probably exceeds 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5. Many of those are personal devices. And the challenges that that presents to you and your organization in the ability to manage and deliver services to those devices, but also without compromising the security of the data that resides within your organization. So end users increasingly want to say in how they consume the applications and services that you deliver. But how do you do that in a way without compromising the security of the data? Because at the end of the day, it's IT who's held accountable for the data. And if that personal information shows up on the internet, they're not going to go talk to the end user that lost the device. They're going to come talk to you. And as Satya talked about this morning, at the same time that these industry trends were happening, there's a huge amount of technical innovation that's occurring at the compute level and servers. So multi-core, NUMA technologies, the ability to do so triple and quad channel memory to really increase the memory density within commodity systems. And so if you just look at the compute power compared to a few years ago of a commodity 1 or 2 processor box today, it's just light years ahead of what it was just a few years ago. Network speeds continue to increase. We're seeing 10 gig Ethernet becoming more and more pervasive, moving to 40, and then even starting to see the emergence of 100 gig Ethernet. So these pipes, huge amount of compute power, huge pipes, ultimately driving storage. And we talked about data just a minute ago. The amount of storage required and the cost of storage within your organization is increasing at a rate faster than the cost of storage is decreasing. And the cost of storage is decreasing massively. The cost of disks, flash in particular, which is transforming the industry. Flash just a few years ago, a decade ago when I started at the server team, a gig of flash would have cost you many thousands of dollars. Now it's about the half of a stick of gum. You know, so literally it's less than a dollar to buy a gig of flash now. And so how do you utilize those new technologies within your organization? So as we thought about Windows Server 2012, we codenamed it Windows 8 at the time, we wanted to take advantage and leverage all of these inputs, as well as the inputs within our own organization. So we've always dog-fooded our own software. And so by having Exchange and SharePoint and SQL and the key applications that many of you depend on, running on Windows Server provided us a great feedback loop. But nothing was ever at the scale of what we're doing in our own public cloud with the likes of Bing and Office 365 and Windows Azure, Windows Update, and so on. Additionally, we have the feedback from all of you. Windows Server today runs on over 75% of all x86 servers on the planet. 75% of the 330 million or so servers on the planet are running Windows Server and the applications that your organizations depend on every day. And that feedback loop that we get from you as part of our process truly does guide our path forward. And so what we wanted to do was take the industry trends, the technology innovation from our key partners at the bleeding edge, particularly thinking about these transformed data centers with hundreds of thousands of nodes, and the experience that we have managing hundreds of thousands of servers on a daily basis at scale, and deliver that to you with Windows Server 2012 and System Center. And so we want to take those learnings at scale and then make them available to you in a variety of shapes and sizes. Whether you're a smaller organization with just a few servers, you can still benefit from the ability to have higher availability, higher performance, and the ability to connect to public cloud services or hosted cloud services. And if you're a large-scale service provider or you're an enterprise that really wants to transform your data center and act like a host or a service provider, we really built this operating system for you. So let's talk a little bit about the transformation that we're going to show you a little bit later embodied in the demonstrations and the products. So the historic model is you had a server, that server had a processor, and had a set of hard drives and disks for storage, and had a set of interconnects.
You had an application that ran on that server. It lived and died oftentimes with that server, and it was inextricably connected to that hardware. So, enter about a decade ago, virtualization came in and allowed us to break the bond between the application and the underlying hardware by abstracting the hardware underneath it, thereby freeing us up to do server consolidation. And almost all of you today use virtualization in some way, shape, or form. Today, however, only about a quarter of all servers are virtualized, so there's still lots of room for more virtualization. But when you look inside the average data center today, it still looks like silos of virtual machines on silos of servers. And so we really still haven't broken through and delivered against what we believe is the modern data center approach. And so if you take a look at what large-scale service providers are doing and what we do in our own data center, we take the same concept of having compute, storage, and highly interconnected networking that you saw inside that piece of tin that was once a server, and now you turn it on its head and think of the entire data center as your server. So you've got many nodes, many servers acting as your compute power, hundreds, thousands, so on. You've got large pools of shared storage, and you've got a huge interconnected backbone of networking capabilities powered by the high-speed networking capabilities that our industry partners are delivering. And you think about the service, not the underlying server. The service itself runs across a number of nodes. So you think about resiliency and high availability in a very different way. Where you used to cluster and use highly redundant and expensive hardware gear to provide high availability because you were afraid what happened when that server died, now in a modern data center, you expect failure. The software is resilient and self-healing, and it expects and is resilient to hardware failure underneath it. So no single node, no single rack, and so on. And so when you start to think about the data center as your unit of compute, it enables you to think about delivering IT services in a whole new way. Now our goal is to take what we learn in our own data center and the common technologies we provide, and as I said earlier, package them down and deliver them to you that's consumable and approachable for the scale that you have within your organization. Again, whether that's a few servers, a half rack, a rack, or a full data center. We also want to make those capabilities available across all three data centers. We talk about the Microsoft data center with Windows Azure. You saw demonstrations this morning. A service provider's data center running Windows Server and System Center. And of course, your own data center, your on-premises servers. And we stitch that together with a common fabric of common virtualization, the VHD format. Common management with System Center. So you're able to look and manage across your own physical infrastructure or virtual infrastructure in your private cloud. Reach up to the public cloud, whether that's in Windows Azure or in a service provider, with a single pane of glass. The ability to leverage all of the investments and knowledge that you have today in Active Directory and managing identity and be able to leverage that as you move to the cloud. And of course, it all revolves around the application, and so your developers can use a common set of tools with Visual Studio, .NET, and the development tools and frameworks we provide to be able to develop the applications that run in any cloud. And so that's our strategy, to take the learnings, apply them to all of your data centers in a consistent fashion. And what do you get when you come out the other side? You get a data center that has shared resources. So I mentioned the siloed nature of many of our customers' data centers today. To truly transform your data center, you really need to think about a shared fabric where multiple business units, multiple workloads, and multiple customers all share that common infrastructure. That truly provides you the ability to aggregate demand geographically across customer bases, across different workloads that have different usage patterns, and so on. By truly being able to aggregate demand at your broadest scale, you'll be able to more fully utilize the resources you have within your organization. It needs to be scalable and elastic. It needs to grow and shrink with demand. You need to automate everything.
You need to be able to deliver a self-service experience so that your business units and application owners who are writing the applications don't have to wait for weeks for you to provision something. You can just push that provisioning out to them and let them do it in a self-service fashion. And you have to provide a continuous service. And again, you have to have software to stitch that all together. And so that's what we believe the benefits are for a modern data center: to increase the agility of your organization, allow you to respond to the needs of the business much more rapidly, because that's what your business units are getting today from public cloud providers. With a swipe of a credit card and a few clicks, they can put their app on the public cloud. They want to be able to have the same ability to get IT services from you. And that's really what we're here to try to deliver. Better economics by leveraging the economies of scale, by leveraging the economies of sharing the infrastructure, you're able to reduce the cost of delivering it. And then taking advantage of lower cost industry standard technologies and industry standard servers and storage, you're able to further reduce the costs, similar to what you see from the hoster across the street. And lastly, the ability to focus on really what makes your organization run. You can build a highly available infrastructure and deliver IT services out, and your business units can focus on what makes them run and the applications that they need every day. And so you can really establish the service provider and application owner SLA between you and your business units. So Windows Server 2012 and System Center truly do try to deliver against this. And we're going to show you some of the capabilities in Windows Server that deliver against this in four chapters. The first is you want to build and scale a reliable, elastic, and scalable infrastructure. The second is you want to deploy applications. Thirdly, you want to manage and make sure they're always up. And lastly, you want to be able to extend those applications and services out to the devices and maintain the security of that data sitting in your organization. So let's double click on the first, which is really about delivering a scalable infrastructure for your data center. There were two areas that we really focused a lot in this release. Number one was delivering a complete virtualization solution, taking the concept of machine virtualization and applying that to the network and to the storage layer to fully abstract the underlying resources from the application and the operating system so that you can truly have complete workload mobility. The second thing we focused on was scalability and performance. And you saw a lot of those demos this morning with almost a million IOPS, large-scale virtual machines with 64 virtual processors, a terabyte of memory, and so on. So really taking scalability and performance to the next level such that no workload is off limits. We really want to make sure that we can help you make virtualization pervasive, even for those tier one applications that have historically been off limits. So with that context, the first I want to invite Michael Leeworthy up, who is the man behind a lot of the keynote demos this morning, to do a demo of some of the capabilities in this area.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, so we're going to talk about IP portability. Well, we're going to talk about network virtualization. And what do we mean by network virtualization? So Mike talked about that, we saw the onset of virtualization and being able to abstract the hardware layer. And we all know about that, the ability to virtualize the CPU and GPU and memory. And in Windows Server 2012, we looked at how do we take that further? How do we make this entire elastic infrastructure? We looked at virtualizing the storage with a technology we call storage spaces, which we have a lot of sessions on at TechEd. And then we looked at virtualizing the network layer. And virtualizing the network layer gives us incredible flexibility and elasticity in joining our data center into service providers, but also providing a lot of flexibility in our own data center around IP portability and multi-tenancy. And it's really important for a service provider and many of our organizations to create multi-tenant, isolated, and secured environments for divisions and for customers. So I'm going to show you some great new things with network virtualization and ways that you can use it. Now, why is IP portability important for me? Well, we've all got one box that's sitting in the corner that's got a hard IP address, that we have an application that is hitting that IP address, And the issue when we talk about IP portability is every time I change subnets or I go across VLANs or I go across a geographical boundary or into a hoster, I'm defined by the destination IP range. I have to change my infrastructure to that IP range. And that can cause me problems, cause me issues. So with network virtualization, we've solved that problem. So what I'm showing you here is a virtual machine manager, vNext, which is our next version of virtual machine manager running on Windows Server 2012. And I've got two sites. You can see here, I've got my wingtip network, and I've got a New York site and a Seattle site. I can quickly look at that, and you'll see underneath here, I'm running a couple of different subnets. So on my Seattle network, I'm running a 172.16 subnet. And on my New York network, I'm running a 172.17 subnet. So these are two separate subnets in my organization. Now, if I go and look at my virtual machine, if I go and look at my virtual machine infrastructure, you can see in my New York office, I'm running both a CoHost Server 1, which is a multi-tenant environment. Because we can run secure multi-tenancy, I'm running both my infrastructure services to support my infrastructure, and I'm running this customer server or this division server, which is fully isolated utilizing network virtualization. If I look at my Seattle office, you can see I'm running a CoHost Server 3. Two different servers sitting in two different offices on two different subnets. And the great thing here is if I go and actually have a look at the IP address range of each of these servers, I'm just going to run a really quick script here. What this will do is it will bring back a couple of really interesting things to look at. One, you can see here on the top one, I'm running it on the local server. This is in my Seattle office. Host 3 is my New York office. What you're seeing here is the address of one of the CoHost servers, CoHost Server 1, is 10.2.1.4. The other address is 10.2.1.9. They are in exactly the same subnet. They can actually talk to each other. They can ping each other. In fact, if you have a look, this is the server, my CoHost server here. We can have a look at his IP address. That's that 10.2.1.9. And he can happily ping across the network. So even though I've got two different subnets across two different sites, these servers look and feel like they're in the same subnet. But underneath the covers here, what you're looking at is these have provider addresses. So these actually have these physical addresses that are associated in each of those subnets, and utilizing network virtualization, that's invisible to this infrastructure, it's invisible to these virtual machines. So this provides me that great multi-tenant isolation, that great network virtualization. But it doesn't stop there. I can actually do some really powerful things. For example, if I go back to my VMM here, I'm going to take my CoHost Server 3, and I'm going to live migrate that across into the other subnet. So I'm just going to migrate this virtual machine. And what Virtual Machine Manager is doing now is it's looking at my environment. I'm going to choose to look at all my hosts, not just the Seattle hosts. And you can see here, here's my Windows Server 12 host 2, which is sitting in my New York office. Make it a little bit bigger. I'm just going to click through here. The great thing here is that all this stuff is built on PowerShell. So everything I'm doing in System Center is actually exporting, utilizing a PowerShell script. And I can export these PowerShell scripts to run this time and time again. With PowerShell, then I can orchestrate it and I can automate it. So it's a very, very powerful solution. I can take this information. I'm going to hit the Move button. So what will happen as we talk is this will actually live migrate from one server to the other. It should happen fairly quickly. We're on a fairly fast network here. The great thing is that while we're live migrating, utilizing our new Windows Server 2012 live migration components, my customer or my division or my organization that's utilizing the server will never know. They're going to be able to access it. It's always up. It's always on during our live migration techniques. So that's basically done now. We'll actually see that sitting in our New York office. Now, if we go back to this PowerShell script that we showed you before, you can see some great things here. So if I can go and look at this one, you can see no provider addresses here. But again, if I look at this one, you can see now it's picked up the new subnet provider address, but it's kept its customer IP address. So I've got the ability to move virtual machines across subnet boundaries, keeping its own IP address, providing IP portability. I can use this in my organization. I can use this across the cloud with a service provider. The great thing here is we're not limited by VLANs, and network virtualization provides me a lot of elasticity for all my networks and all my customers out there. Thank you very much.
Awesome. So I think he showed so many things there that I do want to pause for a second. You know, what used to require tons of VLAN gymnastics to be able to try to figure out how do you bring multiple organizations together in the case of a merger or an acquisition, or if you want to be able to move a workload from one part of your network to another, it required gymnastics for you to be able to do that because of the network configuration. You had to move your network configuration to wherever the destination was. Now that you can do live migration without boundaries, as well as abstracting that physical network from underneath you, and so you can provide a true multi-tenant environment, a shared environment across your organization. There's a link here I want to point out because, as I mentioned earlier, there's about 130 different sessions that talk about at depth at the level of information we're providing here. And so you're able to go to this link and see the list of sessions. There's a blog post. And so you can build your schedule out for the rest of the event, as well as connecting with all of us here. So now that we've talked about building that shareable, elastic fabric, of course your organization depends on the applications that you develop and you deliver on a day-to-day basis. And so we really want to talk a little bit about the application platform that we're developing and delivering. So Windows Server 2012 includes IIS 8 and ASP.NET 4.5 as part of .NET 4.5. And there's a huge number of enhancements in the application platform for IT professionals. Organizations are building their applications using simple web technologies, including in the enterprise. But it's important to be able to keep those up and keep those secure. And so there's a ton of new investments in website density, as well as security and multi-tenancy within IIS 8. And so to show a couple of those capabilities, I'm going to invite Prabhu up to the stage here to go over those.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
So hello, everyone. So I'm going to walk you through three new features that we've added with Windows Server 2012, especially IIS. The first one is around certificate management. The next one is around managing the performance of your web applications. And the third one is around managing security. I'm assuming that all three of these are something that you can instantly relate to. So let me just go ahead and launch my application here. As soon as I launch my application, you see something that's pretty familiar to most of you, right? I seem to have run into a certificate issue. I'm not going to walk you through what you've done in the past to fix this issue. All of us know that it's hard, it's challenging. But let me just walk you through what you could do with Windows Server 2012 and how we make things really simple for you. In the IIS console here, we have something called a centralized certificate repository. So what this is a repository of all the certificates across all your applications that are running on this web server. It not only lists the certificates that are on your system, but it also lists all the other relevant information that you care for. For example, the certificate name, the application that's associated with, who issued the certificate, and most importantly, when the certificate expired. So as you can see, one of my certificates expired a couple of weeks back. So no doubt I'm seeing a certificate issue, right? Again, updating this certificate is not something that I'm going to talk about with respect to the previous versions of the operating system. With Windows Server 2012, the repository that you see is a dynamic repository. What do I mean by that? So as soon as you update the certificate, all the information from the certificate immediately reflects in this repository and automatically gets pushed up to the application. So all that you need to do is just copy over the new certificate, and things continue to work. And how do I copy over the new certificate? Let me show that. So I right-click on this, and then choose Explore Certificate Location. It shows me where the certificate is stored. I open wherever my new certificates are present. I right-click on it, choose Copy, right-click here, say Paste. And update my certificate. As simple as that. Now let me just go back into my IIS console and hit refresh now. So as you can see, the expiration date is 2014 now. So my certificate has already been updated. So let me just go ahead, close the application now, and open it up again. It usually takes a few seconds for the policies to be reflected in IIS and then get pushed all the way up to the app. So as soon as the app opens up, you should see that the certificate issue is gone.
And so what would have normally required that you copy the certificate on each and every IIS server in the farm, and if you're a hoster, that could be hundreds or thousands of servers. Now with a central certificate store, you copy it once into the central store, and it populates throughout the farm, throughout all the IIS servers.
Exactly, without any stopping of servers or restarting, configuring your web applications or anything like that. This is taking longer than usual. Let me just jump back into the next demo, and we could come back to this again. So for the second part of the demo, what I'm going to do is kind of wear a hat of a hacker, right? So what I'm going to do is start hitting my web server with a whole bunch of zombies. What do I mean by that? Just pound the server with a whole bunch of requests so that the server is extremely busy handling those requests, and the server's resources are not available to the other applications that run on the server. So in here, I have three applications. One is the Expense Manager application, which is supposed to be working fine. The next one is an uglier version of the Expense Manager version, which also runs on the same web server. And the third one is the tool that I'm going to use to hack the server. So what I'm going to simulate now is a denial of service attack. As I told you, I'm going to generate a whole bunch of zombies by clicking on the DOS attack. Now let's just go back into the web server and launch Task Manager. As you can see, the CPU is now getting pounded pretty heavily by the hacker app that I used, and so is my Ethernet connection. So what's happening right now is, you know, number one, you have someone, a malicious user or an app that's hitting your server. And number two, it's using the majority of my CPU resources, thereby starving the other applications that are there. So let's go solve these problems one by one, right? Now first, let's try to make sure that the other applications that are running on this server also get a fair share of the CPU resources. So for that, I'm going to jump into the application pool section and then get into the advanced setting of this particular application and then throttle the CPU. So I'm going to say that, you know, the app doesn't get more than 50% of the CPU. So no matter what you try to do to hack the system, this app cannot get more than 50% of the CPU. So let's just jump back into Task Manager and see what's happening. So this was the app which was taking about 80% of the CPU. Now it's roughly taking around 50%. So the ceiling that I set in with CPU throttling has already kicked in. Now the rest of the 50% of CPU is now available for other applications that are running. So what I've effectively done is kind of delay the problem, right? I fixed it so that the resources are available to the other applications, but I haven't blocked it completely, which is what I'm going to do now. So jumping back into the IIS console, I go into the IP address and domain restrictions. So this gives me the ability to dynamically block application requests that are coming in without having to add it to a list of banned IP addresses by knowing the IP address of the machine, the domain controller it belongs to, and so on. So I'll go and dynamically choose the settings so that any app that basically sends in more than three concurrent requests at the same time should be blocked, because I know how this app is supposed to perform, and I'm not supposed to have more than three concurrent requests. So let me just come back here. And within the next few seconds, you would actually see the CPU usage here dropping down. So it's slowly dropping down now. And you would see this flattening out over the next few seconds too. So if I go back into this particular app, so this is my hacker app, and it's using the same credentials as this specific app. So let me just go ahead and refresh it. and you would see access denied. So blocking a malicious app was that easy. So just to summarize, you've seen three things here: how easy it is to manage certificates, how easy it is to manage performance of your applications, and how easy to manage denial of service attacks and essentially security of your applications. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Prabhu. And we'll be up available later afterwards for questions. So now that we've talked about the infrastructure and the common fabric, we've talked about some of the applications that you can develop and deliver and make sure that those are up and safe, we wanted to talk about management and availability. There's a couple of things that you learn as you grow into a large-scale service provider, and things that we've learned and also learned from you and our service provider organizations. The first is that you have to think about that data center as a unit. You have to be able to manage multiple servers and automate everything. That's to be able to drive up the efficiency in your organization and drive down costs. And so with Windows Server 2012, we really focused on PowerShell and the automation capabilities within it, as well as improving the capabilities of Server Manager, which all of you use on a daily basis, to be able to do multi-server management, especially for workloads that we see in scale-out architectures. The second thing, focusing on keeping that service continuously available, the team really looked at the sources of downtime from you and across all of the layers of the stack of what really causes our servers and applications and services then drives downtime. So we looked at it from a single node perspective, what drives up the downtime from one server to a cluster of servers, as well as across sites. And so the capabilities in Windows Server 2012 reflect that same approach. So if you're thinking about the availability of a single server, there's new capabilities like NIC teaming, the ability to not have to worry about a single NIC failing right in the box. We've also got an improved resiliency of the file system, such that if you've ever waited hours for a check disk to happen and had to take the volume offline as it scoured through all the files on that volume, which could take hours and is directly proportionate to the number of files on that volume, today that scan happens in the background. And you only have to take the volume, the portion of that volume down of that disk that's been affected. So it could take what used to take hours now down to a couple of seconds. Dramatic improvements in uptime just on daily activities, like if you have bad sectors in a disk. From a multi-node standpoint, huge innovations in the clustering capabilities of Windows Server and especially with Hyper-V. So you think about cluster-aware patching, the ability to not have to take down an entire cluster to patch it because the patches can roll across the set of servers in that cluster. We apply that same methodology in our own data center where we have these fault domains of multiple racks of servers, and we can update tens and thousands of servers in a very short period of time with no service downtime. We wanted to take that concept and bring it down to you at a scale that made sense for all customers, which is to think about a cluster. And so we'll be able to show that in a little bit. From a multi-site standpoint, the ability to do asynchronous replication and replicate virtual machines to a secondary location or even to a service provider to provide high availability in the case of a disaster or a business issue. So across availability as well as multi-server management and automation, huge amounts of new capabilities in this version. And I'm going to invite Rick up to show you some of those.
Thanks, Mike. So from a management perspective on Server 2012, I thought I'd show you a little bit about some of the things that we've done to be able to effectively manage, but I decided to focus specifically on going with the built-in server tools. So I'm just going to remote in here to one of my boxes. And I wanted to show you Server Manager, as you hopefully have had a chance to take a look at it because you've downloaded the release candidate to be able to take a look at it, release preview. And you can see here that obviously I have my information of one server that happens to be there to number this case, it's RD13 SRV07. And I have the ability to go off and to see, well, I've got some events that are visible on my screen. I've also got some services and everything else that's down there. But it's only from a single server perspective. If it's a multi-server environment, I need to be able to go off and very quickly to say, let's go in and actually add in some additional servers that make some more sense. So let's go in and add in, that was 7, so I'm going to add in Active Directory 1 and 4 and bring them these guys up into a real multi-server environment. Now, when I'm looking at this now, I can select all of these individual servers, and then now notice the size of events that actually took place there has increased up to number 171. And just in case I forgot to add in an individual server, I can always add another one back in. And let's add in number 2 as well. And when he refreshes, we come on in there, because now I'm up to 220 different events that are now brought together inside one spot to be able to go off and manage. Now, there happens to be the ability to filter on the fly for different things. I can see here that I had an actual stop error that caused me a power issue on my individual system for a bad restart. That's not all that great to have happen on the system. Going down and taking a look at this a bit further, I can see if there are any services that happen to have had any kind of problems as well. But besides diving into individual areas that I can group off and sort by server, sort by different functionality of service name, different statuses of those individual servers, I have a lovely view of a one-glance kind of a dashboard to be able to see. Now, generally, green is good and red is bad. I want to go off and actually fix some of these individual errors that are up here on this individual environment. So I know that if I click down here on all servers, there actually were some services that were stopped on 3 individual boxes. Without having to jump off to anything else, I can very quickly just go off and say, you know what, go ahead and start those services on those remote boxes, and let's go off and make them happy again, all from one spot on one individual place. And that makes some of my redness go away. Again, if I go in and take a look here at my events that happened, that was my power issue, well, you know what, I don't need to view that one anymore because I've already dealt with the fact the server's back up again. I'll make sure that I go off and check the UPS system, make sure that's happy. And then also down here on BPA results, there are some issues with BPA results as well, but I can also now go off and filter if I wanted to. Now, this will refresh and give me a nice green-looking screen to be able to go off and take a look at on a more nicer basis for where those different systems happen to be. And I'm doing this all from one single server, managing, in this case, I've got 3 or 4 of them that are there. Now, to really show you this from a perspective of a remote management capability, I really should not be doing this from the server console because it's really a best practice to go off and to use a Windows 8 client system to be able to go off and manage. So signing back in on this guy here. I can go off and also load the remote server RSAT tools on this individual box and have server manager, and in this case, again, he hasn't refreshed as of yet. There's still some red there. That'll refresh, and those individual error messages and those warning messages will now go away. Now, from a server perspective, I gave you a brief little quick look at some of those servers from a view of being able to do some dynamic filtering, once again, on critical issues that happen to have come up. That's been filtered off, so it's all good. But down below, I also have the ability to go through and to take a look at trend analysis from performance warnings and performance alerts. In this case, I've set up a performance alert to go off and to warn me if the memory happens to go below a certain level with a nice little red icon on my system to go off and fix it. And same thing with CPU utilization happening to spike up too high in a particular area. Now, one thing that's also rather interesting from this perspective as well with RSAT tools is that I can dynamically go through and start off any of these individual things I needed to. So in this case, from a management tools perspective, I can right mouse click on top of my Active Directory system, and then all of my Active Directory tools come up to be able to launch off the appropriate MMC consoles, all from that one spot. Or if I happen to hit my IIS box, I could also have those IIS tools happen to take place as well. And another thing from a remote management capability is obviously the ability to go off and say, let's go in and add some roles and features. So I had a request to go off and to make server 2 into a web server. So go off here and say, add some roles and features. It's giving me the option to basically say, let's do a role-based install for features. I want to specifically target my server number 2 box. Again, I'm doing this from my client, and I want to make him into an application server and an IIS box as well. Add in the additional features that are required. I'm just going to click through here to the end. And then, if I needed to, I can export the configuration file to be able to use for staging servers faster in the future, or I can go ahead and kick off a background task that'll go off and install those individual functionalities on that box in question. In this case, making IIS server installed on server number 2. Pretty simple stuff from a a day-to-day activity, but it really streamlines and trims down all the effort you have to do for pulling up all sorts of different tools. Now you can do it all from one individual place. Now, you can't have a demonstration talking about multi-server management without talking also about PowerShell. So PowerShell is obviously something that we've made a very big investment in, and the numbers that have been going around are, you know, in addition to or more investment in PowerShell to the tune of 2,300, 2,400 different commandlets that are go. I'm just going to let you know that's a moving target. That's continuing to go and go. The commands are coming fast and furious to be able to add in. The scripts are coming in fast and furious. The standard demo for being able to do a PowerShell is to do a very quick little, here's a get command and show you the commands. But I want to show you this one here instead, which is actually a bit more interesting, which is show command, which will go off and give you a nice context-sensitive view of all those individual commandlets that are there. But if I wanted to filter down just on VM, I can type in VM, get some details on it. I can also do feature to be able to see what different features are there. And then, for instance, here, if I want to find details on install Windows feature, it gives me some information. I can get the help files, and I can also show some details to give me some individual pieces of information that I need to be able to include on that command line path to be able to go off and to do stuff with some PowerShell. Now, PowerShell with the interface that you're used to here is definitely great. Myself, I'm more of a junior PowerShell person, and so I happen to like the ISE environment, which is better, in my opinion, because of some of the new technologies that we brought in. You see the thing on the slide, which again does the show command and dynamically changes stuff on the fly if you wanted to. But in this case, I can go through and say, get Windows, look at that. IntelliSense has been able to catch up with me and tell me the different pieces that I need to have to say, show me off all the different features that happen to be on a particular server. RD13 SRV07 as an example is a box I'm going to look at. And that lists off all the different features that happen to be possibly installed or installed because they have a checkbox or an X on them. Let's go through and run that guy again, but this time let's pipe it in with a where installed is equal to true. And it's only going to show me a subset of just what's installed on that individual box of server number 7. For Windows PowerShell. Now, on server number 7, I noticed that, you know what, there's no server backup program that's installed on this guy here. So let's get some server backup installed on that guy. But I happen to have already left and gone home for the day, and I now need to go off and still be able to manage this guy. Well, in this case, we also have the ability to go through and do a nice little thing here. It's called PowerShell Web Access. That has been set up on this guy. It's giving me a warning because I'm using the local certificate, and so ignore this warning. So I'm going to sign in with my authentication. In this case, it's over HTTPS, as you saw. My username is coho/administrator. Put in my password. And I want to talk to RD13SRV07 in this case. And I want to go off and sign in. Any standards-based browser is able to log in if I put the right password in. Did I spell administrator wrong too? There we go. Okay. Here we go. Let's fix that one too. Okay. It's very secure, as you can see. So I'm actually opening up a PowerShell window through the PowerShell, if you will, PowerShell Web Access Gateway, talking to a box. Now, all the same standard security that applies at PowerShell applies to the box I'm talking to. Am I allowed to run scripts? Am I not allowed? Can I only run a subset? Can I only run them local? Can I run them remote? All that all still applies, but it's taking place over top of HTTPS. So in this case, I want to go in and say, well, that's an install Windows. And yes, tab complete does work. It even works on a phone, on an Android device, an iPad, on whatever browser you like. I want to say go ahead and install Windows feature, and I'm going to say Windows server backup. Go ahead and do that install. Because I targeted a specific system already, I want to talk to 7. It's going to be installing this on 7, and then off it goes. And you know what? Just because I've now convince you guys that the RSAT tools and remote capabilities for being able to manage servers remotely are such an awesome solution to be able to manage your systems. I'm going to actually go and take this guy, import server manager, import module. And then I'm going to say, oops. There we go. And I want to say remove Windows feature server GUI shell. This is actually going to go ahead and remove the full GUI from that server and turn it into what's known as a min shell environment, which gives me server manager on that box and also gives me the ability to run MMC commands. But it's removed Explorer, it's removed Internet Explorer, and it removed a whole bunch of other stuff you don't need. It's like an in-between server core and a server full install. I could have actually gone ahead and gone to a full server core if I wanted to. It's a longer command set to do, but I don't have to. So with that, I'm going to say that's management, and that's good.
Thanks, Rick.
And Rick's not going to go far because it's just in a couple seconds he's going to keep demoing. So, you know, one of the most important things you can do for your organization and for your career as an IT professional is to learn and really develop automation skills. There's very few things that differentiate as much and improve the efficiency of IT as much as PowerShell and automation. And so thinking about that, I think, is really important while you're here at the event, because it will differentiate you in the market. So the last chapter we're going to talk about is, how do you now extend those applications and services to all the end users and all the devices without compromising the security, the data? Now, there's a number of sessions on remote desktop services and VDI throughout the week. We're going to focus this demonstration on access control, because now that you've been able to have users get access to data from anywhere on the devices that they love, and delivered by Windows 8, as well as all the other devices that are coming into your organization, we really want to make sure that you don't have to compromise the security. And so the ability to make sure that only the users have access to the files and information that you want them to is paramount to be able to improve that security of your organization. And so Rick's going to talk a little bit about dynamic access control in Windows Server 2012.
So with dynamic access control, I'm going to show you just this from the perspective here of an administrator signed on to a box to be able to manage it first, because I need to set some context here. I'm getting fat fingers today.
PowerShell can solve a lot of manual errors, except the logon part, right?
Yes, that's for sure. So this is my client system with management tools on it again. And in this case, I'm going to go off and take a look at the Active Directory Administrative Center at first, because I wanted to show you some dynamic access control. Dynamic access control has a number of new different pieces that fit into this. Basically, you've got some resource properties that you're now going to be able to store inside your Active Directory and then apply them to files and to folders that can then be used in classification rules to restrict people from access or to auto-encrypt things and that sort of stuff. And so you've got resource properties that are able to be defined. In this case, you've got, for instance, let's go off and use the attribute called department in Active Directory and make that show up inside a file share and restrict people on that, as an example. Or let's go in and classify some impact stuff from an impact perspective. Now, you also have these things called claim types. Claim types are something where you can go through and, for instance, here, apply these to users. So, obviously, we've got the department that can be used as well for an individual user to identify them. The neat thing about a claim type is that you can now use these claims as part of your security access control list to be able to have access to files or not have access to files based on who you are. So, just to kind of show you this, we've got Ben Smith, and Ben here happens to be a member of the finance department, standard attribute inside the Active Directory. You've got Ashley up here, who is also a new hire. She is not a member of the finance department, so she is going to be lacking that particular thing. When you combine those two little pieces into individual access rules, you can see here that this particular finance rule has been set up to say when the department equals to finance, if I scroll down here a little bit, you'll be able to see that I have a listing of permissions that will be granted or removed for individual people. If you belong to finance, you will now have extra things applied to you when you do an access control list enumeration. And then these policies are basically how they're applied off using group policy to your individual file shares and to your individual servers that are out there. So let me actually take a step back for a moment here and show you the file share itself. So the file share in this case on a box called file server, it happens to have a folder called finance. If I take a look at finance and under security, where you normally would see your access control list, I can see here that I have a central access policy that's being applied, and it is the Department of Finance rule, which states if you belong to the department called finance, you should have access to it. So if I go off here and check and put in Ben, for example, I can see that Ben will be granted full access to this resource. If I go in and choose Ashley instead, you'll see that she's actually going to be denied access from this. So that's all good. Now, we also went through and identified some other resource properties that are out there, specifically for files, that can classify it as PII information or as high security information that you want to go off and protect. So if I log back on again here as my, in this case, I'm going to go with Ben, different user account. Now, I've made a rule, which I'll show you in just a second, that has already gone in and done an evaluation on the file server that says, hey, I've got access to a folder structure, and inside that folder structure, if I have a new document that I create, and inside that document, I'm going to have, let's for instance, is a high impact thing, a credit card information. Let's just say it's a 4 digits that happens to be in there. I'm going to close that guy off and save him. This is going to, in the background, kick off a delta, the fact that the server has now realized that there's been a change to that file server and there's been a new file that's been added. And instead of having to wait for a regular scan to go off and find that individual document, it's actually going to go off and notice that, hey, that machine actually has a new file that's on it, and that new file happens to have something that looks like it's a looks like that it happens to be a credit card. If you didn't notice, right up in there, this system now happened to have increased the size of that file because it's now encrypted automatically. And so the file server now has a rule that basically states, if you match this particular pattern of characters this many times, we're going to go ahead and automatically protect ourselves and encrypt that. With the proper credentials, you'll be able to get in and see access to that file. File Server Resource Manager, there's a whole session just on that one there. Server Manager, Multi-Server Management, there's at least 3 different sessions that Aaron Chappell's doing. I know one of them is going to be taking place tomorrow. They're all there as part of those online resources you can take a look at the end of these individual slides.
Thanks, Rick.
Yep.
So, wrapping up here, you know, we really have just scratched the surface. There's over 350 discrete features and enhancements to Windows Server 2012. There's 130 sessions for you to choose from across Windows Server and Management, over 80 just in Windows Server 2012 alone. If you haven't downloaded the release candidate yet, join your colleagues that have. Be the first in your organization to try out the operating system. Go to the hands-on labs. Take advantage of all of the resources that you have available. Connect with all of us here at Microsoft so that you can learn more about the release, answer the questions that you have, and make sure we're on the right track. That's what we're here for. I want to thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of the conference.